Wouldn't it be great if three idiots picked apart each episode of your favorite podcast?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if we discussed the newest episode, ongoing theories, and predictions for what comes next?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if they didn't ruin the podcast at all and kept everything spoiler-free?
We don't do that. You've been warned.
Welcome to We Do That, a Taz fan cast. I'm your co-host, Chris.
I'm your co-host, Dr. Jake.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes, love it.
And I'm your other co-host, Colin.
This week's episode, Amnesty, episode 12.
Okay, guys, a short recap of what happened in this past week. A, Jake became a doctor.
Woo, defended his dissertation. Woo! Big ups.
Thanks,
awesome.
Friend.
Also, Aubrey did some sick stunts on the slopes. Ned and Duck got some soup, and Mama has a human prisoner underneath the lodge.
Yeah, sounds right to me.
Then some table talk bullshit.
I cast Zone of Truth.
Ooh, don't do that.
I don't think anyone's gonna want that.
Yeah, that's not good.
Cause listen. We actually went and listened to our episode last week.
And I nailed it.
All right.
We should not do that.
On one, you are contractually obligated to nail it. So I don't think I can give you that Mama came back.
Yeah, the Thacker thing, though, nailed it.
Okay, yes, that was very good. You did do that.
You did guess that Mama was going after Thacker, the guy who owned the laptop. And you were right.
Mm. There are not three better words in the English language.
I prefer we do that. I guess that they would level up, and I was right. I guessed Mama was on the moon, which we don't know isn't accurate yet.
Right, right.
I guess that there was a sage, wise man on the moon. Again, we don't know that that's wrong. I also guess that there would be some sort of hospital scene where Mama would wake up in the hospital and Aubrey would have just left her a note, be like, peace. That did not happen.
Didn't happen. I didn't fare that much better. I thought we'd get a scene with Agent Stern. Didn't happen. I thought Mama was in Europe or nearby fighting the government. Didn't happen.
Which, what? Just
fighting
the government?
The government.
Okay, all right.
Like trying to keep the Pine Guards safe from the prying eyes of Big Brother or something.
Sure.
Still didn't happen. I thought we might get some hints of Ned's past, a little more backstory there. Nope. And I also thought we'd get some sort of heartwarming hospital scene. And that didn't happen either. Didn't do great.
Yeah. We may not be great at this predicting the future thing.
You know, it's tough because we're bad listeners and not great thinkers,
right?
But good talkers.
Right.
So
even I think that part's debatable.
Well,
by like a quantity measure.
Oh, yeah. Quantity, then yeah, we've got that down.
So like Fox News, hit us up.
Yeah, right. If you need to fill some airtime, we'll sit and just go.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess we might skew a different direction than what your typical program would be, but we will fill that time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
we won't be
silent.
Look, you know they don't go for thinkers.
Yeah.
They don't go for good listeners. It sounds like we're right in the wheelhouse, except for the whole...
Just the wrong side of the wheelhouse.
Right.
We need... What's the opposite of a fox? A chicken?
What?
Hedgehog.
Hedgehog. What?
Hound.
Hound? But yeah. They're friends in that Disney movie.
That's why it was so touching, because they're opposites, and they were friends. Think about it. In your heart of hearts, you know it's true. Crushed it. He's speechless. This is the greatest moment of the past hour.
So, I want to get into this episode, but I'm going to try to read the room real quick and say, dear listeners... This one might get a little more blue and negative than normal. We try to provide a balanced opinion, but...
I don't.
we of a trio try to provide a balanced opinion, and I don't sense that one coming on this critique, and I'm going to lead off with my feelings, which are, hey, fuck this episode. It sucked. It was bad. I didn't like it.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it was great. I thought there may have been some nice pieces to it, but I did not think it was good.
I didn't think it was bad, but I didn't think it was good either. Like, I'm not going to... That was much bolder than I was expecting Chris to come out of the gate on that one.
I have some very strong feelings about this episode.
Well, let's get into it.
Yeah, start.
Okay. Just structurally.
Yes.
Letting the setup of the last episode be Mama's back, and then the first major activity we do is a ski trip, is bullshit. And just boggles my mind why they would decide to fluff up the front end of this episode when there's clearly content to get to.
Also, before we even go there, well, it's kind of the same time.
Yeah.
Mama's back. Oh, she's in the hospital. Let's take a break. Let's go on a ski trip. Why the fuck are Duck and Ned there? They've talked to her for about 30 seconds before she disappeared on them. They fought the main bear thing in the cave, whatever that was, the rare bear. But suddenly they're like, oh, you know what? Yeah, let's take off work and go on a ski trip with this bunch of strangers from this lodge.
And also, like, if they are all as close to Mama as they would not someone be standing vigil at her bedside, like, for when she wakes up and there's a friendly face because we care very much about her? Like, nope, the Sylvans are going to go skiing.
And so she doesn't, you know, run away.
Right, which, yes, because that leads into the next part, which also doesn't make sense.
But also, 2 weeks ago or a week ago, whatever it was, they were at a water park, and now they are skiing. Like, there seems to be a disconnect.
Well, the water park was going to reopen for its very last weekend.
But even still.
Griffin said we fast-forwarded by 2 months.
Did he say 2 months? I don't think he said 2 months. Because they show up every other month, the Bomb Bombs.
We fast-forwarded by a lot.
I don't think we fast-forwarded by that much. I think it was 2 weeks.
Maybe they got an early winter.
I mean, I didn't listen great. But also, he said the ski lodge was like 4 minutes away.
Yeah.
I am so confused about the structure of this fucking town.
No. I buy that. Because when they first describe it, they drive through Main Street along or near a river. And then, like, switch back a while. And then there's the upper part of town, which goes to the ski lodge. And then they drive through that. And Amnesty is, like, up a road farther that way.
Yeah, but how is it? Hey, guys, we're all going to go skiing at the place 2 steps away. Like, that's not a big deal. That's not a big to-do. You don't have to announce it to everybody.
It could be if it's the first snow of the year. It could be if...
If it's the first snow, you're not going to have enough of that powder. Got to get that powder.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
I'm just saying, it just seemed
there's some weather liberties are happening here.
Yeah, and I there's nothing I hate worse than weather liberties. As I call them, wibbities. I guess it would be wibberties, but...
We've been having a lot of fun with portmanteaus today. And by we, I mean Colin and I. And Chris has been particularly upset with us.
Actively rubbing a hole through his temples. I'm going to need skin grafts by the end of the day to repair the damage.
Scraps.
Right. I hate you! I hate you both! Burn right. This place down. Right, it's my own house.
Look, we will ignore the Wibberties for the moment.
Okay, so if we ignore the Wibberties... That is the extent of my strong feelings for the first half of the episode, I think. The ski day happens. Does anyone want to talk about it?
Maybe I should just put it aside and not care. But I don't get why... Okay, I get it. Ned owns his place. He can do what he wants. But Doc is taking a day off work.
Well, hold on. I don't even want to get to the fucking soup nonsense yet. Because I'm not there.
Just their presence. Their presence that they would go on this ski trip thing with a bunch of strangers. Well,
in Justin's defense, he does phrase it as he comes by later to meet Ned at the bar for dinner.
Okay.
And Griffin just wrote it into it's midday and you're both there.
Yeah, that I didn't like.
Yeah, Justin does set it up as like, I worked all day and then came and met Ned because Ned was there.
Which would make a lot more sense.
I mean, Ned knows Barclay, though. Like, I imagine he and Barclay might be buddy-buddy after their sort of bonding.
Where was
like,
Barclay?
Skiing. He was with the girl on the mountain.
Yeah, it just seems strange that, I mean, it doesn't seem like Ned or Doc are particularly close to Mama. It seems strange that they would need, if you accept the premise that they're going skiing to get their mind off of Mama, it doesn't make sense that they would tag along necessarily. And it seems like one of those things, and that's, I think, part of what's hurt with the whole origin story thing they went through, is we don't have a trio that does stuff together.
Yeah.
Or we do, but there's no natural way for them to have formed that trio. We have three people leading independent lives who are all part of this Pine Guard.
Well, and I think what I also am realizing I'm struggling with is that if they did have downtime, I think based on the characters they've created, they would not be socializing at the lodge. They'd be using that time to actually do research and figure out what's happening, and Duck would be doing more training, and Ned would be, I don't know, grifting to get, like, artifacts or whatever. Like, I think they'd be doing stuff. Which obviously they set up that ability in the back half of this episode, but I don't. It just doesn't. The premise of them like taking a day off to go on a ski trip just doesn't fit with any portion of the world or the characters that we've met so far.
Yeah.
It seemed very. It just seemed very out of place.
Well, it seemed like something from Balance, where it was like, hey, you three, you guys are having the Midsummer's Fair, but that makes sense because there are three guys in this. Like dormitory that have to do everything together.
Well, and it makes sense that like at the Bureau of Balance, they're especially when that Midsummer's Fair episode happens, like it's an annual event. It's a thing that exists in the world. There aren't any particular pressure points of stress that are happening. It's just the general, like, fuck, the world's ending because of the artifacts kind of deal. But there's not like the immediate, because I think what bothered me the most is like if Mama is back, there is no reason that would not be the entire focus of their attention.
Yeah,
and I don't think they would get the entire lodge to go for a ski trip.
Yeah, it's all in all, the whole premise seems like it rubbed at least you and me, Chris, the wrong way.
Yeah, where Jake's gonna try to write this ship.
It doesn't make sense for one reason or another, or maybe multiple reasons.
And my argument would be that it doesn't always have to make sense. This is designed to be a middle episode. And so I think it was really cool that we got some meaningful development out of it on the back end. Now, the problem that I do have is that they didn't actually ski at all. Like, my boy didn't get any time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, zero Jake Cool-Eye stunts.
Right, if you're going to have a character whose job is stunts, he best be stunting on the slopes.
True that.
Hornets? That's weird.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Right, okay. Let's talk about that for a moment. Are they going to be a thing? Are they going to come back? Or is that like a one-off, like, I'm going to make a fun antagonist to Jake Cool-Ice?
Okay, so not to jump too far ahead, because I won't talk about anything else in this episode, you know.
At all?
That'd be awesome. Well, don't get your hopes up. But, like, it's one of those things where there seem to be so many items in play where Griffin was moving the story to where he wanted it to go.
We talk about this a lot, and I think, yeah.
Yeah, it's okay, now what, it's, and this is something that frustrates me, I know I've spoken about it with Amnesty, he clearly already has a larger story in mind, and he's going to force the players, force the pieces in the story to move how he wants them to move, or within certain constraints. And so, and I mean, I know role-playing games are really a matter of the game master or dungeon master introducing elements for the player characters to respond to, but things like the Hornets, it's like, what, this is just a group of people who go around and get sponsorships to do stunts? What, is this a Disney movie?
Well, and how, like,
I swear this is like that rollerblading Disney movie.
Also Air Bud.
One of them. It's not
no,
Air, not Air Bud.
No, I'm saying there's like 4 million Air Buds. It's got.
But they're
be
all
of them.
About a dog that does stuff, and not about sort of an antagonistic stunt crew.
Yeah, but so what I'm saying is
might be like Mighty Ducks.
Air Bud would be the Daniel LaRusso character. Like the dog would be the underdog.
Well, no, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Hold on.
You can't. To defend Air Bud, you can switch it to Karate Kid.
Yeah. Which was also side eye that my Mighty Ducks metaphor. I think that one's pretty good.
But that's like an international competition they're playing in.
That's Mighty Ducks 2.
Well, Mighty Ducks 1 is a national competition or competition of some sort.
Yeah, they're somewhere.
But isn't there like an old Disney Channel movie with, I mean, I'm sure it's for some competition, but
There's one about football. Called. There's one about basketball. There's one about roller skating. Disney did them all.
I'm focused on the roller skating one.
That sounds right.
Can we loop back to the badminton one? Because I would watch the hell out of that.
Did he say badminton?
I didn't say badminton.
He didn't, but I'm putting that out. He said we did them all.
Put it into the universe. See you on a Disney Channel original movie about badminton.
Yes.
We can start tweeting at Freeform, see what happens.
So the Hornets seem weird as hell to me.
Yeah.
The title would be Badminton, but with like a capital B-A-D.
Badminton. This is so bad.
Is there any chance it gets confused for that horror movie about where the family gets stalked by a evil mitten every winter?
Badminton.
Yeah.
You put it on and it like possesses you and...
Yeah.
Just your hand.
Like the fire gauntlet, but cold. But makes you like just snuggly warm on your hand.
So like a mitten.
Like a mitten. But it's bad. It's a bad mitten. It also like throws rocks.
I feel like this idea might need some more workshopping. Because current mittens can throw rocks if you pick up a rock.
No, you're not particularly dexterous when you kind of just got two, like a finger and a thumb. And
that's a hand puppet.
That's what you do with a mitten.
Yeah, but you can still pick up a rock. You have enough dexterity to pick up a rock.
Well, it was a small rock.
Well, that wouldn't be a rock. That would be a pebble.
So do we think the Hornets are going to come back later in the... I mean... That's dumb. They're going to come back later, yeah. And it's going to be something.
Yeah.
Are they going to be bad, or are they going to be like a save-the-day kind of crew?
Probably bad.
Well, and that's sort of kind of what I hate, is like he's putting this piece there, Griffin is, that does nothing in the current episode. They don't do anything. There's no point to them. It's, okay, they make fun of Aubrey a little bit, and then Jake a little bit. And then they leave. They don't do anything.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, the beginning of Disney movies where the bad guy shows in and like...
Oh, hey, we're bad.
Yeah, it does that cool thing where they slide in on the ski sideways and kick up a bunch of snow. Like, hey, what's up? We're the cool kids. We're going to be the antagonists. See ya.
Look at these losers, Sven, sitting at the bunny slopes. Like, he's word for word a Disney movie.
Yeah, it's awful, and I hate it.
And I think... What frustrated me for just the entire front end of the episode was that every moment where I was like, this seems strange and out of place, it was a moment where we were not learning what Mama did.
Yeah.
Which seemed to be the big to-do of the thing is Mama was gone.
Yeah, I mean, I think like that imbalance, that fair episode makes sense because there's nothing else to do at the moment.
Right, yeah, you're sort of just in between. You're in between things and the larger arc has kind of paused.
Yeah. Like,
there's nothing else you're working on.
Yeah, there's no pressing matter that's set up with a cliffhanger from the episode before.
Yeah.
That you will then promptly ignore.
Yeah. Yes.
Anything else about the slopes, or should we get on to the soup?
I guess we need to address the soup in the room.
Chris, you can't say that.
Something soup to nuts?
If you can't say that and not have soup in the room.
I don't have any soup.
It's good, because I don't really like soup. I like tomato soup, and that's about all.
So this episode did nothing for you, because it made me ravenously hungry to hear this entire exchange. I want this French onion soup very much.
I've never had French onion soup.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So it did nothing for me.
French onion soup off?
Can I just have good? We can just find some place that makes it good?
Make it, because it's... I mean, Can does a really good job.
Yeah. There we go. Maybe we'll do our next. We'll do our 50th episode live from French Onion Soup Place, a place that says French Onion Soup.
From French Onion Soup Place.
French Onion Soup Place. Yeah, it's. I don't know what to say about it. It was weird.
It was.
I get like weird. It was. It was a strange bit of like enjoyable Justin and Clint role play where they're just sort of like figuring shit out and Griffin has to go along with it. And that's always neat and fun, especially when they sort of put Griffin on his heels for a couple moments. And that's always good. But why, what, how?
No, yeah. I think I really liked Duck's you know, what we learned about him was like, oh man, like
that he was swayed by soup into not defending.
Well,
the world.
I mean, to me, that feels kind of realistic. Like, hey, here's this one example of the life I'm about to give up if I keep going down this path. Now, yes, there is a lot surrounding it that I think could be cut, but I think that moment was really powerful. And I think that that's the kind of thing, like, we can see that Duck is still struggling with these, with, you know, oh man, I actually kind of do have to step up, and that's scary. And so to come back to his French onion soup to be like, hey, this is, now this is not why I am deferring my responsibility. This is why I'm embracing it, because this is something that makes...
This is something worth fighting for.
So,
yes. Some sort.
I don't disagree, but I do doubt the impetus to share any of that with Ned. So I don't think that's a bad realization. It seems the way in which they entered that seemed like a strange thing to do. Like...
I mean, I think that just came out of the improv, though.
Yeah, I mean, again, if we imagine this scene the way that Justin set it up, that Duck was coming to meet Ned, and, you know, we haven't seen a lot of it, but we know that they have a relationship. We know that Duck trusted Ned enough to hold Beacon.
It's true.
Like, yeah. So like there is depth there.
Well, and I think
that I think we're not seeing.
Yeah, and Justin said coming into it that he wanted to like talk to Ned about something. So it makes sense that they would be heading towards heavier topics. I don't know that they ever arrived at any like particular thing that Justin wanted to get or that Ned that Duck wanted to get off his chest.
I feel like the soup goof, the soof.
Just say
can't,
word.
You can't force it, Jake. It has to come to you naturally.
Oh, that's fair.
The natural portmanteau.
Don't. I can see your eyes. Don't do it.
I was waiting for Jake to do it. He was doing some mental math there.
I think the soup goof sort of took the reins away.
Wait, which goof?
The soup goof. The soup.
Yeah, but which soup goof?
Just the fact that the soup existed.
Oh, okay.
Like,
all right.
As the like
I wasn't sure if you meant like Griffin inserting himself via the chef.
Oh, I thought you were just trying to get me to say soup again.
No, never. That's not even a good portmanteau. Yeah,
we'll burn that one.
Yeah.
No, I think you're right. It felt like Justin had a plan for that dinner, and then Ned sort of leaned into Ned and Griffin leaned into like this soup is amazing, and it's a whole thing, and it just snowballed out of the control, and
Now,
how cool was it to hear from their nanny?
That was
awesome.
That was pretty good, yeah.
I like that. Favorite part of the episode, quite honestly.
It was very, very good.
One thing tangentially related to this conversation, well, directly related, but tangentially related to something else later in the episode, is the way Griffin just rewards experience points for having this soup. I imagine so everybody can get to a level where they're able to level up. But doesn't that rob the whole point of getting experience when you fail of some of its meaning?
It was very much a D&D
which way I get, of awarding experience. Well, and you know, I kind of wonder if that was a joke. Like, because we don't have their sheets in front of us.
Right.
We can't.
But they all leveled up, right?
They were going to I think no matter what, Griffin would have had them all level up.
I think so too. And so the question is why award them experience points and it's during D&D when they fought a monster, he didn't say, okay, you gain 20 experience.
So I think my argument would be to sort of the point of how Griffin says has this planned out, Griffin already knows when they're gonna hit every level.
Yeah.
So I think the experience points are probably largely a formality. Like they're going to level up at the end of each. They're either going to gain one or two levels at the end of each interlude, depending on what, at the end of each hunt, depending on what he wants them to do next.
Right.
So I don't think it matters when they get experience. So, like any failures they have, he's just going to be like, well, I'll just take a level.
So So then why do it?
I think to highlight that they're doing a good... I think it was Griffin giving out a point of inspiration, but in the Powered by the Apocalypse system.
But inspiration in D&D allowed them to basically gain advantage on a future roll. This does nothing because Aubrey gained more experience than the other two, but it does nothing for her. And so either do something to make it meaningful again or just get rid of it. Because I think people failing on their own is narratively interesting enough for them to not have to dole out. And I know that's how the system works.
So I think...
But they aren't playing it that way.
Well, but Griffin is, like, sure, writing off the experience and the leveling up there. Griffin can use that to set up the hard moves, though.
Like, well, that's, I'm not saying get rid of that aspect of failure. I'm not saying get rid of failing roles. Just get rid of the tracking experience if it's going to have no meaningful impact because they're going to level up at the end of each hunt anyway.
I would argue that while it might not be applicable to what they actually level up at later, I think the moment when they do a failure roll and the player gets to make a quip about getting experience is a worthwhile for like a funny joke or a funny moment that they should keep the experience system.
Have they made any quip about gaining experiences?
There have been like little one-liners of, but yep, I learned a lot from this experience. You know, just like little dumb things that I think are funny.
But I think they make that, I think they made that even in balance when they have a shit roll. And I don't think they would stop having those quips about having a terrible failure of a roll.
But I think having it have a flip side that is an upside, I think changes how the players...
But there really is no upside.
There is in the formality of the game. We're ignoring it later, but I think in that moment, letting the game system give you a sort of upside to that failure creates a good moment.
To me, that sounds like you're saying or Griffin and the boys want to have their cake and eat it too. You can't... If you're going to have the upside then... you should have it be in effect for the full thing. It just seems like a needless formality if Aubrey's going to fail, and gain 5 experience, and Ned's going to eat 5 cups of soup and gain 5 experience. Like, it's now meaningless to the point where I wouldn't even mention the experience points. And every time he does, I'm going to bring it up here.
Well, and I think...
So you're welcome.
Maybe what it means is we can ourselves track it a little bit closer and see, like, if Travis ends up 10 points up on the next end of the next hunt, does he get 2 levels or does Griffin sort of track it through as like everybody gets 1?
Uh-huh. That's what my money's on. Not real money. I do have $1 in my pocket if you do want to make a bet on it.
I don't.
Okay.
I also don't.
Cool. Well, any of you out there that want to bet me, too bad.
Pretty sure that's against, like, trade laws or something.
Against trade.
Interstate commerce.
Yeah. Probably. Anyway, that's all I have to say about the whole soup thing.
It was a strange moment.
It was.
Partially enjoyable, but in the context of the things I wanted to happen in this episode...
Not real high.
Not worth my time.
Yeah.
Which took us to the ad break. We can talk our way through that one. And then we come back.
Mm-hmm.
And they've returned to the lodge. Mm-hmm. And a door is suddenly exists there that wasn't there before.
That bothers me so much. I hate that. It's not like, there's a door and you've never noticed it. Well, fuck, like, it'd be one thing if they rolled, like, a perception check, which doesn't exist in this world, but...
Right. I think it would be one thing if he had framed it as, you notice a new padlock on the cellar door.
Yeah.
Not that the door exists.
Yeah. It's suddenly, you've never noticed the cellar door.
Yeah.
And I've never mentioned it at all.
Right.
It'd be one thing if he had mentioned in passing and nobody had ever asked about it, because...
There's also so many ways you could do it. Like, you could do Aubrey goes to her room and notices that what she thought was a ceiling vent is actually an attic stair that's left partly open. Calls Duck and Ned up. They open it. They go up, like, beacon drawn, says some shit. Oh, it's Mama, and they're captive.
Yeah.
But doing it, yeah, it just seemed a strange reveal.
Yeah, it seemed very awkward to me. Jake?
I mean, I didn't have a problem with it. The way I kind of read it is that I imagine Mama would have hidden that. Like, and so that sort of explains away, you know, what's going on and why they haven't noticed it before.
But did Griffin ever say previously hidden or anything to that effect? Not to say that's necessarily wrong, but it seems like that would be a key component of saying, hey, Mama was keeping this from you, and now she's not. Instead, he sort of says, you notice the cellar door.
Well, it's just an element that didn't get spoken into existence until this moment.
Yeah. Which I hope, and they've already done a little bit. I think it's funnier when the player characters do that. Like when Aubrey was trying to gain access to the water park, he's like, well, it costs $20. Okay, sure. I have $20.
Right, yeah.
Bite me, Griffin.
But so we learn that Mama had gone to Sylvain, not the moon, or Eastern Europe, and gone looking
for... Or nearby,
to fight the government. She went looking for Thacker. Jake was right. And found him, and he's gone mad, apparently, from being outside the city. So that raises more questions about Sylvain and what the fuck's going on over there. But she's brought him back to hopefully try to gain some knowledge, I guess.
Well, and I mean, we know that they go crazy if they're in Sylvain and they don't have some element of cloth. So, like, we know that that's an established rule. And I imagine being out there so long, there are any number of reasons. He lost his pine guard patch or it was destroyed. I was not concerned by that.
Somehow I missed the point that she was in Sylvain.
Where did you think she was?
I don't know. I know she was hunting down Thacker, but I don't remember them saying that she was over in Sylvain.
They did.
Okay. I mean, I believe you.
Which brings me to my next concern. Motherfucking goat man didn't notice Mama come over and want to say something?
Does he have like a bunch of sentries over there?
Like a bunch of sentries that stand right at the gate and fuck them up the first time they tried to come through. Well, you know, stop them. Not fuck them. That's strong. But there are clearly people who watch the gate on the Sylvan side who would have seen Mama come through.
Yeah.
Well, how does that not get like...
Mama said don't tell him?
Well, yeah, but so... Well, okay. Maybe they let her by because it's Mama and they know Mama. But then why wouldn't they have said anything when they came through later to talk to...
the Heath Council and he's yeah. Yeah.
Like, it seems strange. It all seems strange.
Yeah. Well, and so, again, like, I think this cycles back to Mama didn't tell them where she was going for a reason, and I imagine that that reason extends through all of it. Like, I need this to be secure for now, and so, hey, Vincent, this is under wraps.
Do you think...
Bye, Felicia.
Do you think Mama didn't tell them where they went, where she was going, because she wasn't sure if she would be successful? Or do you think there's a larger mystery still to be unraveled of why Mama had to keep it a secret?
Oh, certainly a larger mystery. Where we're only one arc in. Like, all of this is going to come together. I am certain that Mama knows more than she's letting on.
Do you think Mama bought off Vincent with some choice DVDs? A big movie fan.
The Bourne Supremacy.
I was thinking City of Angels with Nicolas Cage.
Gone in 60 Seconds. It's just the whole Nicolas Cage collection. It's Gone in 60 Seconds. It's Con Air.
City I want to take Lynch. His face off.
And then just put a little bow on the one where he's a fiery skeleton riding a motorcycle.
Ghost Rider.
Whoops.
It was pretty good in, what was it, Lord of War?
Yeah,
that's a pretty good movie.
Yeah, that one was all right.
That was the last Nicolas Cage movie I watched.
I was just talking about Gone in 60 Seconds before. We should watch that.
I've never seen that, honestly.
Fuck, that's a good movie.
It is pretty good.
I'll probably never see it.
Never say never again.
No, that's Justin Bieber.
Right. Never stop, never stopping.
Sandy Samberg.
Yeah. I'm hit all the high notes. All right, so I'll accept that Mama... maybe bought off or somehow convinced the guards to not give away her location and then snuck Thacker back into the basement of the lodge in secret and Thacker was down there for a week, while Mama's in the hospital, and is real quiet about it, as a feral human?
Okay, so maybe I don't even have a save for that one.
Yeah,
okay. None of it makes a whole lot of sense. Or any sense, really.
Yeah, I'm struggling with like what order to address the things that I have questions about in the back half of this episode.
Also, sorry.
No, it's fine. Stop me.
But I did and do. Did Barclay go down with them or not?
No.
To the lot, to the slopes?
To the cellar.
No.
Okay. Because I could have sworn Griffin referenced Barclay down there at one point.
You're right, he did.
But then he also said you three see or find or whatever, which made me think Barclay wasn't there. So I really don't know what Barclay knows and how he fits into this. I also don't know. Aubrey was at the slopes.
Yeah.
These other guys were at the restaurant. Somehow they get the message that Mama's gone from the hospital, and those three are how.
How do they get that message? They get a phone call?
Owl, I think.
By Owl. That sounds right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. If I remember my fantasy correctly. So they all get this message, and then somehow those three all just happen to be the first ones back at the lodge. I thought like this whole group all went skiing together, which, by the way, they can't be away from the springs for more than 12 hours without going all lethargic, as we discovered in the last episode. So I don't know I don't get it. I don't understand.
Yeah, it feels like Griffin got caught up in a little bit of his own storytelling for this entire thing. Like, he had moments he had to hit and didn't maybe have the time to put them all together, or the guys sort of threw off any plans he had.
Yeah.
I don't know how much he got derailed by sort of like, he had a system where they were supposed to have a confrontation and sort of would move through stuff, and they got thrown off by the whole soup goof. And,
the soup.
As much as I am annoyed by any time Griffin sort of puts the narrative on rails, when he does it well. Like, he generally ties things together pretty well without sort of all these sort of hanging loopholes and little tiddly bits that we're picking up on. Like, I think he generally has a better picture of what needs to happen and how to get stuff from place to place. That this felt sort of slapdash for a Griffin McElroy narrative. At least for the like moments we needed to hit in this episode.
Yeah, and I sound like a broken record, but like, and I think there's an extra element of it in like imbalance. I don't think he knew where all of those different strings were going to end up.
Yeah,
right. Like, I don't think he quite understood what the umbrella was when Taco got it in. Here there be gerblins. Like, I don't think he said, oh, this is Taco's sister. And like, I don't think he had that all planned out.
Yeah, it's not the fullness of it. You know,
yeah.
It was maybe just a magic umbrella at the time.
Yeah. But he gave himself room to weave it into this bigger story, and you leave it open-ended. And this, to me, feels like he already has answers to all of the questions he's setting up, which I don't know that I like it.
Or is putting unnecessary details, because like when he describes the basement, there are four or five distinctive rooms that are set up. There's like a chilling room and a workout room and a library and a kitchen. And we learn that. And then he says, this is your haven. What rooms do you want it to have?
Yeah.
And that just seems like a silly, like, why not describe it as an empty basement with a thing in the corner? And then when they choose their haven, it's like, the next first half of the episode is, so you spent the weekend building it out. What color choices did you pick for the, you know, study room? I think, like, yeah, you could have a fun little moment of building it, whereas it existed and now it has to be something different. And I don't know if that's a tie-in of like, this is what the old Pine Guard used it for and you have to redo it.
See, that's how I interpreted it. Yes, there were these spaces that were, you know,
already a haven.
Yeah, already. Like, and again, like, that gets to, there used to be more Pine Guard. They used to use this kind of stuff. And so that was sort of the thing. It was like, okay, you know, yeah, we'll be able to turn this into whatever we want it to be.
I think it gets me is in a lot of ways, this Amnesty has felt a lot more like Mad Libs than like a choose your own adventure.
To sort of filling in story.
Yeah, like, Griffin says what happens, and then he has words that you get to say to add some color to the story, but the story he's already set out. And that's, honestly, that's how it feels to me. Fair or unfair?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of a fine line between the overall narrative and the actual moments of the adventure. Because I think we're coming to a point where the players do have a lot of agency in how things are happening. I think they have a fair amount of, like when they go to Heathcliff for the first time and their pretty dumb choices shape how the final battle comes together. And then when they do go to H2O, that was fun, and have the battle, like, oh, their choices are shaping how that plays out, fitting into the larger narrative that Griffin has. But I think the specifics of it are being player character driven. But I certainly agree that we are, I think we're seeing what happens when Griffin McElroy, who wrote The Stolen Century, gets to start from zero with what he learned there.
Yeah.
Which is like, I want to create this world from the beginning and have this narrative in place. And so any of the more loosey-goosey parts don't really come up. And I think they are still, to probably an extent, finding their stride between strong narrative, telling a story that someone wants to tell, and having like a sort of real play, actual play adventure role-playing game. And I don't know if we're going to sort of find that happy balance at the back end of Amnesty. If they're talking about it being not nearly as long as Balance was, I imagine we have maybe at tops two more hunts, or a hunt and sort of like a climactic final bit. So hopefully they find it then, or if they find it in the next, you know, season three or another set of minisodes or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I don't know. And this is not pertinent to the discussion about this current episode, but I don't know that Griffin wants to GM again, at least immediately.
I imagine he'll want a break.
Yeah.
Especially if he ever hears about our ranting and raving. He's not going to want to deal through this for a whole nother couple months.
Pretty sure we're like pretty high on his download list.
Yeah.
Shit, I had something. So, Peter Thacker, what do you think he knows and can share with the group, if anything? And if nothing, why did she bring him back?
So, I think that Thacker has some idea about, like, she brought him back because he knows something about, you know, she brought up, they're getting worse. They're coming more frequent. The bomb bombs. They're coming more frequently. They're playing to win, you know. And I think, at least she thinks, that Thacker has part of that answer.
Yeah, and I think we'll probably learn more if we learn the circumstances of his disappearance more. Like what was their last hunt? What was his last set of notes, or something like that? But it definitely seems like I could see it being something where, whatever the last one was, Thacker noticed a pattern and wanted to go investigate something. Mm-hmm. Something that was connecting them through. You know, he heard a rumor when he was in Sylvain about whatever this system and monster of the week equivalent is, like an evil sorcerer taking a residence in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something of that effect. So I definitely think Thacker is going to be someone who knew something, has now lost it, and they have to try to gain that back.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, well, I don't want to be, I think that is likely to be accurate, that he's sort of the crazed person who will slowly regain his abilities and has to sort of be brought back to the land of the conscious and the aware. Yeah. When he went over to Sylvain, was he not aware of, like, the fact that you had to have a piece of Sylvan cloth on your person?
So my guess is he knew very well, but I'm going to bet that there is a mechanic involving that big crystal that the farther out from it you get, the stronger the powers of the planet or what, you know, whatever elemental force it is that is affecting Earthlings, that it overrode or at least like over, you know, like radiation exposure, like it wore down his defenses and eventually
that would make sense. Failed. Or there's something more sinister about the crystal and the threads, right? And that, you know, Sylvain isn't quite as idyllic as we'd like to think it is. And so he made a conscious choice not to bring it over, to not be controlled by whatever that...
Right, to avoid whatever corruption the shadowy government of Sylvain is putting together or something. Yeah.
But, oh, is that the government Mama was going to fight?
Maybe she was fighting that government.
But his mind is clearly, like, corrupted now.
Yes.
So,
I mean, maybe he fucked up. Like, like
maybe he was wrong.
My dude rolled in, found some shit was wrong in Sylvain, was like, I'm going to find out the real truth. Threw his patch away and went out and was like, whoops.
Can I have that back, please?
That part was still right. I'm broken now.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible. No, I definitely think if it's not going to be an instant fix, just coming back to the side of the world. Like, if you've been gone for that long...
Yeah, I don't think it's instant, but I think it's something that could be gradual and will probably set up the end game.
What are the chances that it gets fixed by him getting a dip in the sauna?
Hot springs?
Yep.
Well, I guess it depends on...
Right, because if the Sylvans need the power that comes from the center of Sylvain, then the power that comes from the center of the Earth would maybe reset an Earth creature. I could see that being a thing.
But...
Make sure the pump's on.
Yeah, I was going to say, it depends if Barclay has turned it on. I don't know if that tracks.
Probably doesn't.
Because humans don't need to enter the hot springs. The Sylvans need to enter the hot springs.
Right, but if he's lost...
Well, like, maybe humans do need to enter the hot springs. It just takes them, you know, 75, 80 years to break down and realize it.
Yeah, but I mean... Are you postulating that there's nobody over 80 without, like, that's raving mad or super lethargic or in this world? Because in our world, there are people older than that.
I think there could be a... So, no, I don't think. I don't think this is something that applies to all Earthlings as we know them.
Yeah,
but I think it's something that could be a restorative factor for someone who has lost their connection to the Earth.
That's fair.
Okay.
If that's what we're treating as like the source of power in this universe.
Right. The planet.
The planet. The heart of the planet.
Right. Whatever that means.
Do you think they'll ever do like a Yu-Gi-Oh episode where they just play Yu-Gi-Oh and talk about the heart of the cards all the time? And that was a great... I was very into that.
Don't know anything about Yu-Gi-Oh.
Ah, it was good. It was so good.
Sorry.
Get at me, Twitter fans. You know Yu-Gi-Oh! Is great. Blue Eyes, White Dragon, can't lose. Let's get after it.
Is that from Friday Night Lights?
And Griffin McElroy.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't recall that.
Great. It's a Mabim Bam.
There's a Mabim Bam joke.
I don't listen to Mabim Bam.
So, here's another medium-sized issue that I have. Mama's been gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes back and goes on this whole ranting rave about how the bombs are getting worse. And asks, what was the last one? And they say, water elemental. And then she has already built this theory where it's suspicious that whatever this force is countering the abilities of the new Pine Guard. Which seemed like...
Yes, and how do they know that? Because the people in Sylvain told them.
Who's they? What they are you referring to? The bad they?
Yeah.
The whatever bad forces out there in the world? Right. So, that's fine. My concern...
How does Mama know?
Yes, that is my point. How does Mama know? It seems like the theory that Mama has fleshed out is based on the last two abominations being more difficult to fight than previous ones. But she does not know anything about the last hunt, including like the makeup of that monster.
So that's why Thacker's so important then. Like, because I bet his experience extends farther. Maybe he's even seen the gate in another place.
The what?
Wait.
Huh?
I think all those things can be true. But my...
Yeah, no, no, I still get what you're saying.
Yeah.
That Mama's leap there is pretty unevidenced.
Yes. Unless there's a history before we came to meet Mama that we haven't been shared with yet. But based on the conclusions she's drawing, it was just another odd bit of storytelling where it seemed very much reliant on the last two hunts that we, the listener, knew about, which Mama shouldn't know about in any great detail enough to, like, draw conclusions.
One thing that I hadn't thought about before, and this is what let me down, how irresponsible was it of Mama to just peace out for weeks going to look for Thacker?
Very.
Like, this new Pine Guard has been on one hunt.
And they weren't yet Pine Guard. They didn't know anything.
They weren't Pine Guard. They didn't know jack shit. And apparently Mama was under the impression that these things get worse and start targeting the people who are hunting them.
Yeah.
And so she decided to say, yo, peace, I'm out. Catch y'all in like 2 months.
Which is sort of what led me to like, we're going to be wrapping pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Not soon, but like a hunt and a closing.
Well, I could see, I think it would, I could see that. It would make more sense for Mama to be there for the first hunt as the Pine Guard, then to leave after she sees that she can...
Yeah, they've proved their competence.
That they have proved their competence.
Also gives another data point to like, holy shit, we got a fire magician and suddenly there's a water monster. Something's not right. I need to go get help. Y'all hold down the
fort. Yeah, that would make so much more sense. Instead, oh, Aubrey, this girl I just met's in the hospital. Peace out, yo. Catch you in 2 months.
Yeah.
And she's gone. Just very irresponsible mama-ing.
It's poor leadership, really.
Yeah, I think so. Feel bad for Barclay.
It's a lot being put on Barclay's plate.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So I think there is a lot in this episode that didn't make a whole lot of sense to any of us. Certainly to me and Chris. Jake is a little more forgiving, but he still saw a lot he didn't like.
I put the words right into your mouth. Pa, pa, pa. You really hated this episode.
How good is Meatloaf?
So good. Meatloaf might be one of the greatest artists of the 20th century. Don't at me.
No, definitely.
Or do. Actually, like, we could use some
ats.
If you just literally anything, just put us in there. We're fluent in Jake and I like cooking. Jake loves baking. I have two cats. You want to talk about some cats? Colin's into numbers.
You probably want to avoid talking to Colin.
Video games.
So I tend to run our Twitter, and the last time that Colin used the Twitter, he got into a fight with someone. So I'm really sorry.
Well, hey, in my defense, I was right.
Hey, Colin, I just want to, just real quick, if you could list all the things you use as your defense, and are you ever wrong?
The only thing I've ever used in my defense is that I was right.
Uh-huh.
And I was once wrong in 1997. And every zone of postulation we've ever done.
Right. And the beginnings of ends of all of these episodes.
Yes.
Well, speaking of the... Zone of postulation.
Zone of postulation.
What do we think is going to happen next week?
Who fucking cares?
I think we do, considering we have a podcast about caring about this stuff.
Yeah, you're right.
Yep.
Doctor. I don't know. Do you think we're going to get a double lunar interlude? Also annoys me they're still calling it a lunar interlude.
Yeah,
literally
annoys the hell out of me. I meant to bring that up first thing.
Because
it's clearly a Lodger interlude.
I think we're going to get like a half of a Lodger interlude, and then the back half of the next episode is going to be all set up for the next hunt. I don't think it's going to be any more like housekeeping or talking with Mama or Thacker. I think the front half will be a little bit of trying to figure out what Thacker knows, but not knowing anything. In the back half will be Griffin telling us about a bunch of attacks that happened in town. And then,
oh, see, I have almost the exact opposite perspective. And I mean, just time-wise, like, I think the majority of the episode will be, you know, them handling this crisis, probably getting like the first pieces of information about the monster. And then, like, the last 5 minutes will be Thacker gaining some kind of consciousness. And whatever consciousness that is going to be
start of next episode, we're getting a Griffin lead-in narration with the monster, another monster in town.
Yeah. So what monster will it be? Because I 100% think the same thing. I don't think he's going to give us anything else on Thacker until the next larger interlude or anything major.
So here's what I would like to know. So we're countering our heroes.
Mm-hmm.
What's the opposite of a Nerf gun?
Literally
anything hard?
What? Are one of our heroes a Nerf gun?
But that's gun? Ned's power.
Well, yeah, for now.
Yeah, until he goes back to Heathcliff. He's got a new one.
What about the opposite of
a
Nerf
gun? I mean, the opposite of a Nerf gun is probably like...
It's a Nerf gun.
Yeah, it's a Nerf blaster.
Right.
Stick to the fiction. The opposite of the Nerf blaster is like a lead pipe. Nerf blaster is soft and long range, and a lead pipe is hard and close range.
So it just rolls really menacingly downhill.
Oh, God! Look at that abomination!
I was kind of imagining they would hit somebody with it, but if you want to just sort of play like weird, shitty bowling with a with
well,
plumbing
no,
equipment.
No. I'm what I was thinking is like
the monster.
The monster is going to be the opposite. So you have described a situation where the bomb is a lead pipe.
So I meant sort of like in a literal sense. I think if you adapt it to a monster, it's like a metal being, like a big set of high voltage electrical poles comes to life. And is a robot and attacks Kepler.
So,
great movie.
I think there will be a new monster. I've been trying to decide what I think it's going to be.
Oh, I also don't think that's going to be the monster. I just think that's what Jake thinks.
Well, what do you think the monster is going to be?
I think it's going to be a tree. The forest turns against Duck.
Tree. Okay, I could see that.
That's pretty... like, in our little Pokemon hierarchy of powers... that's pretty weak to fire. And if they're trying to get one over on our heroes, picking something that, you know, one of its key properties is burnable might not be the best thing.
Which, now that we had a water elemental, I kind of miss the fact that we didn't have a moment like where it was in the river, where it just like reached up and grabbed a duck and took it down. Because you got some symbolism there. One of our characters is named Duck. Mm-hmm. See what I did there?
I see what you did there.
I think it should be.
This is why we don't do the creative part of the podcast.
I'm just saying, you don't make a big deal out of it. Just it picks up some waterfowl and eats it. And then they have to ask what the waterfowl was. You know, it was a duck.
Well,
wait. I haven't given what I think the monster will be yet. I think it'll be a giant person in hunting gear with birdshot in his gun.
Oh, so Dick Cheney.
Yes, it will be Dick Cheney. I like that. And it's got the metal piece in it because his heart is metal. So,
oh, jeebus.
We got everything. It's got it all. Dick Cheney is the bomb.
Hey, Fox News. Get at us.
Oh, we're back on our bullshit.
Well, on that note. Thanks for listening to We Do That. Next time, we'll be discussing the 13th episode of Season 2, Amnesty. If you enjoyed the podcast, be sure to leave us a review and subscribe. Send us your thoughts and theories on Twitter at WeDoThat_pod using the AtazFanCast hashtag, or you can email us at WeDoThatPod@gmail.com. We'll be back next wrong Thursday.
Bye, everybody.